Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of April 11th. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. Good morning, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Trying to stay warm. I know it's not freezing, but I am.
Yeah, well, that's about normal. Yeah, John's wrapped up here. He's got his Eskimo suit on. It's April 10th. And
it's not that bad.
60 degrees out.
It's not that bad.
He's got his emergency cold weather kit he bought from Army Surplus.
Oh, gosh.
No, I'm just joking. I'm just having fun.
Yeah, I know. Let's get back into real life. On this week's show, we've got an interview with Mauro Gomez of the Hanshin Tigers, and we're going to talk about the Tigers, some early trends, and Kenta Maeda and more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
Okay, well, I had a chance to go to Tokyo Dome on Thursday and talk with Mauro Gomez, the first baseman of the Hanshin Tigers. And it's always a pleasure because he's such a upbeat, positive guy. And I guess the big thing is that this was Mauro's first full spring training with the Hanshin Tigers, because the first year he showed up, he didn't actually show up. They knew his wife was going to have a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And so they knew he was going to be late. But then the baby got sick, as I guess some of our listeners will remember. And there were complications. And so they were going like – they were all ready to make him the reason why the Tigers were going to lose.
Right.
I mean, basically they were saying, how can we win when our new foreign player who's never hit a ball here isn't in camp?
They were pointing fingers at the wind because he wasn't even there yet.
Okay, and then, of course, what happened was instead of doing the preseason games and standing around and whatever it is they do in March, he was getting, a few hundred swings a day on the farm team.
Right.
And he came up and he reached base for, I think he set a record for the number of games consecutively reaching base.
Yeah, I have big memories of that. Yeah, he was good.
Yeah, he was good. So anyway, so the round two comes last year when the dog ate his passport.
Rover.
Yeah, that was it sounded like an Alex Cabrera story, to be honest, or Fernando Seguinal's. Thank you. Sorry, Fernando, I love you, but that was a good story about him having to travel all the way across Florida to get a visa to come back to Japan, so he wasn't able to make the Asian series.
Right. What was the excuse again for Mauro?
Mauro's car was broken into in his carport. And his passport was in a bag that was stolen.
I remember. Refreshing my memory, that always helps. I'm getting up there in age, you know.
Right. So we talked a little bit about that. And I was curious whether, first 2 years he had this issue of, like, the team's expectations and that weighing on him, that he had to perform or something. So I was interested in what he thought about that. And John wanted to know about his impression of the collision rules at home plate and how they were affecting the game. So let's hear what he had to say.
Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Hanshin Tigers first baseman Mauro Gomez. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for reminding me.
It's always a pleasure. And, you had for the first time this year, you were here from the beginning of camp. How was that?
I mean, I made it finally, and, I was working hard, the beginning, spring training, tried to be ready for opening day, and, now we're here, just fighting.
Okay. Was the biggest thing, now I know the first year there was health issues regarding your baby, and then last year you had a passport issues, but this year coming in, you didn't have to, any of that weighing on your mind, you didn't have other things be in the back of your mind like that, or at least I think not. So was that easier for you?
Yeah, when I agree with the team, mm-hmm. for one more year, so I say, okay, I'm going to be ready, opening day. So, first day spring training, mm-hmm. I'm going to be there because I was late first 2 years. Mm-hmm. So, I'm going to make it this year. I hope, nothing bad happened. Mm-hmm. And I did. I did. Right. So, I came here first day, and like I say, I just working hard every day, try to, you know, be ready for opening day.
Was it a little easier for you to do it that way?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I say yes, you know, nothing happened. Nothing happened like in the past. Okay. So, you know, everything was good.
You got off to really another good start. I mean, the first year you got off to that great start, and everybody said he shouldn't even be going to camp.
My first year, you know, I have a pretty good start.
Right.
And last year, you know, a little tough. You know, second year, every pitcher knows you. Mm-hmm. You know, the pitch is a little tough. But, you know, this year, my batting average is a little low, you know, but I feel good at the plate. You know, a couple home runs, RBIs. So, you know, it's helping the team.
Yeah, you're tied with Yamada for home runs. So.
Yeah, he's a good player.
Okay. Now, tell me a little bit about, you got a new manager, Kanemoto. What does he bring to the team that you've noticed so far?
I think, you know, he's a good manager, you know. He talk with the players, you know. He sometimes he have fun with the players, mm-hmm. you know. So I think that's good, you know. Players want to play for you, you know, mm-hmm. play hard. And I think that's one of the key.
Okay. Now, you weren't a teammate of his, so when he was a teammate, he was really, when he was a player, he was very focused and very sort of like obsessed, and I think at the end of his career was always seemed really a little dark and gloomy, but as a manager, he looks very cheerful and upbeat.
Yeah, I hear, you know, he was a good player, you know, he put a good number in, here in Japan, Big League, and as a manager, like I say, you know, I think he's a good guy, you know, talk with the players, and that's the guy, you know, you want to play hard, you want to win for him.
Okay. Now, the Tigers have had some, you know, they came here to Tokyo Dome this week, and you got a great performance from Fujinami. He's been really good this year. Is he a little better than what he was the last couple of years, you think?
Yeah, I tell you yes. You know, he's young, you know. He's year by year, you know, he learned more and getting better.
And he was really using his fast, I mean, he was using his base running skills the other day.
Yeah, he can run. He's athletic, you know, he's very good.
Okay. Now, the Tigers, are you guys challenging for first place? So it's got to be a little fun. I mean, last year, obviously, you guys came on in the second half, but it was kind of a difficult season.
You know, it's too early, you know, I mm-hmm. think. But, you know, I think we have a pretty good team. You know, mm-hmm. we got pitching. We got, you know, two younger players. Right. They're doing pretty good right now. So I hope, you know, they continue to do that. And we can score, you know, a lot of runs and win.
I know it's not you. You know, your job is to take care of you on the field and, you know, do the things you need to do. But when you see these, you know, 20-year-old and 22-year-old guys coming up and playing, you know, making those adjustments, it's got to be fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun to watch a little guy, you know.
Uh-huh.
Takayama, yeah, he's nice, you know, he got good discipline at the play, and, you know, everything you throw to him, he hit it. So, you know, yeah, it's fun to watch him.
Okay. Now, the other thing, a little bit different this year for Japanese baseball, they've changed the rule, and the catchers who used to be able to obstruct home plate now can't.
Yeah.
They're going like, we know we let you do it before, but we're not going to do it anymore. So just forget all that stuff we taught you for the last 80 years. And how, in your impression, and you've seen some plays at the plate, I guess, and you've watched some videos, and as a runner and a fielder, how do you see that changing the feel of the game or changing a little bit of the plays in the infield or the outfield?
I think, you know, it's good for the runner, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might get hurt, you know, when because here, in the past, my past last 2 years,
right.
You know, catchers, they get it in front of home plate.
Yeah.
So you don't have space to slide.
Right.
So, you know, now I think, you know, it's good. They give you, you know, a little space and mm-hmm. you can just put your hands. And it's good. It's good for the running, you know. You don't get hurt, nothing, so.
Did you ever get a contusion or a bruise?
I think, no. But I think last year, Giants, Coach Shen, you know, I was running in second. Somebody got a hit, so I got a score. And the catcher was, you know, in front of the home plate, so I got a push a little bit, and he dropped the ball, so it was safe. But, you know, like I said, it's danger. You might get hurt for that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to hurt the other guy. Nobody wants to hurt the other guy.
I mean, you know, it's easy. Like, you know, you got a little space to just pull your hands, and if, you, you know, he got a chance to tag you, it's fine. But, you know, it's slide, and everybody's happy.
Everybody's happy, yeah. If it's a good, you know, if it's bang-bang and fast, yeah. I think the fans will enjoy that, too, I hope. Yeah, now the other thing is that we had, in Japan, and the majors always, the second base is always a little dangerous. A lot of the Japanese infielders go over to America, and a lot of them get hurt. And now they've changed the rules over there. I don't know if you saw the Batista slide.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
it wasn't vicious. It was just kind of like a little tap. And
Yeah, but, you know, second base is danger too. A lot of guys got hurt because, you know, sliding, tried to break a double play. And, you know, like I say, anything, you know, they make a rule for help, you know, the running or even second base, that's good. Mm-hmm. You know, just slide on the base so nobody get hurt or nothing.
I asked Luis Cruz about that, and he said, somebody broke my leg when I was 18 or 19, and it was my fault. I says, no.
Yeah, I know. You know, players that I know, I think Lowry, he played for Blue Jays.
Yeah.
I saw him, you know, he's like hard and second base.
Yeah.
So you, as a second base, you got to be careful when he's coming, you know.
Mm.
But like I say, now, you know, they make a rule, I think it's good. It's good for the second base, and it's good for the runner.
So you'd like to see, you know, a game that's faster and a lot more maybe athletic and less dangerous?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, less dangerous, that's better. You know, nobody want to get hurt, you know. I think, you know, as a player, you want to finish your season, you know, in good condition.
Right. You don't want to see your teammates get hurt. You don't want to see other guys get hurt.
Yep.
All right. Well, I appreciate your opinion there. Okay. So have you noticed runners taking more chances on the bases?
Now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I say yes.
That's a good thing?
Yeah, why not?
More fun,
yeah.
And less fear and less worry. You're running from second base, I'm not going to end up in the hospital.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, now you know you got to, you know, slide, how you say, clear, like,
yeah.
Can touch the second base.
Yeah.
And like I say, you know, less injury is better.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for your time, and good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you, Mauro.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Mauro. It's great talking to you, bud.
Yeah. I'll see you out at the park sometime soon. See you again for sure.
Okay. Now, other than just being a downright pleasant, you know, positive guy, what else would you like to comment on?
Well, you know, again, you talked about how upbeat a guy he is, and that comes through in the interview. And I remember the first time I talked to him, and I think some of the listeners will recall, I said, I did the interview, and then afterwards he's asking me, how is my English?
Oh yeah,
and he's concerned about how his use of the language comes across and all that stuff. And he sounds fine. He sounds better than before, even to me a little bit more improved. But, you know, sometimes his answers were a little bit short. I think he wanted to get to the next question sometimes. But other than that, you know, this game is played every day. And he emphasized the issue that stood out to me during the chat was that he was talking about players on both sides and, you know, runners, catchers, and the safety issue and that in the collision rule. And I'm not just pointing to that because that was the question I asked you to ask him.
Mm-hmm.
But that seemed to be the way he interpreted it was that we want our teams to win every game, every day. Mm-hmm. And we know it's not possible and we know it doesn't happen. But he's focused on, hey, let's get through the season healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's make sure we don't hurt our fellow players, and let's sure that we don't get hurt.
Mm.
Because, you know, there's no guarantee that slamming into a stationary catcher or a fielder at a base somewhere won't get you injured and out for the year.
Mm.
And vice versa, it could damage the opponent. And, you know, those things are important. I mean, we know we want to win. We know they want to win. We want them to win. But being able to compete every day is that's their job, and that's what they like to do. And so that kind of stood out for me.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. There's a contradiction in baseball in that you know, everybody, nobody wants to hurt their opponent, but the rules allow you in sometimes, and this is the, sort of the paradox we've had in Japan, you know, foreign players would run into catchers, you know, try to jar the ball loose, but Japanese players rarely would, or would sort of do it in a very, you know, safety first fashion, you know, bundle up in a ball and then slam into them or something. That paradox is that nobody wants to injure their opponent. Nobody wants to get injured, you know, in terms of their careers and as you said, the long season, but the rules allow you to injure opponents to gain an advantage.
Right.
Okay. And now here's the problem, because you have to play to win. So for your the sake of your teammates, for the sake of your team, you need at times to put your body at risk and your opponent's health at risk in order to fill need, you know, that second need of winning the game and winning the season. So this is the principal issue that baseball is struggling with. And they've come up with all these kind of, I'll use a different word that was going to come out of my mouth, but they're trying to define it like a computer program. You know, when you talk to computers, or when you deal with computers, they're really stupid. I mean, they're really good at doing the same thing over and over again, but they're not really good at figuring out what you mean. You know, so if you give it something ambiguous, it won't know what you mean. So they're trying to, what they really want to do is remove the risk issue without sounding like they're being wusses. You know, they're saying we need to keep the integrity of the game, you know, the hard, play hard spirit of the game, which comes with that violence, you know, that necessary undercurrent of allowable violence.
Right.
But we don't want people to get hurt. So which is basically they're going to have to actually come out and say, we don't want the players to interfere with the field. We don't want runners to interfere with the fielders. And what they're saying now, oh, you can interfere with them, but only under these very precise kind of weird definitions.
Right. Well, I've been having a debate, and I know we're getting off topic a little bit, so we'll get back on it in a second, but I've been having a debate with some of my friends in the States because of calls that have been made in the States, in Major League Baseball at second base. And I said, look, it's very simple. You know, these illegal slides and what you're talking about, slide into the base like your intention is to be safe. That's it. You know, no sliding off of the base, no sliding late, no grabbing people's cleats and all that stuff. Slide like you want to be, like you expect to try to be safe for the to reach the base and not come off. And if you do that, you're going to be fine. And, you know, the complaints that people I'm hearing in the States, it's just ridiculous, because we've been in Japan for both of us more than 20 years, and we've been watching these guys peel off and let the double play happen, or just slide and get to the ground quickly and let the fielders throw to first over their heads even. It has never been a problem. It's never been a real problem.
It's weird at first, because it takes a little bit of getting used to, because you're thinking, you know, you need to help your team. But again, here's the point. They have to actually say, and this is what they're failing to do, because baseball used to be a game where it was the runner's job to essentially push the boundaries of the rules to interfere with their opponents.
And the umpires let them get away with it inch by inch, you know.
Yeah.
Incrementally, more and more throughout the years, until
backwards. It's gone retrograde, I guess, with the power of the unions and the player salaries. You don't see Hal McCray knocking somebody into the second baseman against the outfield wall.
right. But yeah, I want to get back on topic. So.
Okay. Yeah, I mean that you know he's mostly concerned.
No problem.
He's mostly concerned about the injuries, which I think was interesting that you focused on that.
And then when he talks about Big Brother Tomoaki Kanemoto, the first time manager, and it being fun, it's just fun. And Kanemoto just it doesn't jive for me. And here's a quick story. In 2005, when the Tigers were on the way to winning the Central League title, I went to Koshien for a series. late in the year, and I wanted a quick second, just a quick moment, one or two questions with Kanemoto. And as he was walking, he was making his way back from batting practice and going back toward the locker room, I approached him and I asked for a quick minute. And he's walking off thinking about his just taking batting practice or whatever he's doing. I don't know. And he never missed a stride, never looked up, never said anything, never acknowledged me, right, walked right past me and into the dugout.
He probably thought you were a Tigers fan. You see, the Tigers, it's funny because if it used to be the thing, and there's something here. There may be something here. There used to be a thing with the Tigers that when they would walk off the field, I'll speak at Tokyo Dome specifically because I see it happen a lot there. Mm-hmm. But when they walk off the field into the dugout during practice and the fans are going, oh, Kano-kun, you know, they're calling for Keisuke Kano, and they're waving and they're holding up their sign. You know, they got a Kano sign prepared, and Kano will be, you know, inspecting the amount of dust on his shoes as he walks into the locker. And I don't mean this is just about Keisuke Kano, and I don't even know if that applies to him. But I would say 9 out of 10 Tigers, that's almost required behavior.
Yeah. Well,
you don't show anything to the fans, and for many of them, don't show, well, and for Tomoaki Kanemoto, don't give anything to the reporters at that instant.
Right, right.
Yeah, I was surprised when Jason Koskri told me the first player he talked to in Japan was Kanemoto.
Wow, yeah. I mean, one of the at that time, I said to one of the Yomiuri beat writers, does he talk to anyone? And they're like, no. You're lucky he didn't walk right on top of you.
Wow.
And so to hear Mauro say that it's fun to play under this guy and to see Kanemoto on the bench, I mean, I didn't peg him for a guy who would smile or just be he just seems bright and chipper, downright chipper on the bench. And it just seems weird to me. It's like he's changed.
It does. I think obviously he has changed. And it's interesting that now we're seeing sort of like the inner – I think this is actually the inner Kanemoto is coming out.
not the outer one. Get rid of that one.
yeah, the one that, you know, needed to focus so much on, I guess, maybe trying to keep the public demands to a minimum. I mean, you see him on TV laughing and joking with other players and things and thinking, wow, who is this guy?
Yeah, he's that guy.
But that's the guy we're seeing on the bench is this, and I've heard he's a funny guy. Because I know people who English speakers who talked to, I forget who it was, he said, like, what foreign words have you learned from, I think, one of the Tigers foreigners, and he said some words we can't say on the podcast.
I would bet.
So I've heard that he's a funny guy, but he didn't let that show when he was a player. At the end of his career, at least, he didn't let that show when he was a player. Now, what I thought was interesting there was, and I think very appropriately, and often you and I have different viewpoints and about the place of different things in the game. But if you ask a player about a manager, I guess what he gives you, I mean, you might get a player who would say, well, I like his tactics, or I like his approach to the game. Mm-hmm. But essentially, the most important thing for a player is, how does he manage players?
Right.
You know, not whether he go, you know, his administration of the bullpen or spring training, but, you know, is he easy to work for?
And the communication factor and expectations and
So I thought it was interesting, I guess, revealing or in retrospect obvious, but the obvious answer is, yeah, he creates a good working environment. So that was kind of interesting to me, because we tend to look for other more deeper issues, but that's a huge issue.
It's big. It's true. It's
for the true. Tigers, you know, especially for the Tigers, probably more them and the Giants more than anybody else. So his opinion of the team was, you know, again, nothing too radical or unusual. We've got a good team. I think if you asked 12 players from 12 teams, they would say the same thing.
Yeah. At this point in the season, yes.
Yeah.
maybe not the Oryx Buffaloes at the moment, but hey.
Well, they would say
they have good players.
Hey, there'll be guys at the end of the season after they lost who said we had the best team. I don't know how it was that we lost.
Right. That's so true. I also like what he said about Shun Takayama, the rookie, with Mauro saying it's fun to watch him.
Sure.
Those words. And you don't hear that kind of comment from a veteran guy about a first-year player that often. I mean, you interview a guy and you ask him about a teammate, you never get anything negative anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But
almost never.
Pretty much never,
unless they're talking about Tomonori Maeda.
Hashtag
hi. Never say never. Okay. But you don't usually hear. But a lot of times when you hear a veteran talk about a rookie, you'll hear them use words like potential and hopefully he keeps it up and that kind of talk. And to see him and to have him say he's fun to watch right off the bat like that really puts a lot of stock in what Shun Takayama is doing, I think.
Well, he is fun to watch. You know, he's I right now in my mind, and you know, this is a fluid concept, but he reminds me of Shogo Akiyama or Akira Nakamura, the Hawks, or a couple other guys. So, just good plate coverage and going to go any direction. So that's my impression. But again, I haven't seen much of him, so I'm not having as much fun with him as Mauro is.
Right. Well, Mauro leading the Central League with 15 RBIs, and we're taping on Sunday morning, so this is before the Sunday games. And he's got home runs. I think he's got three or four.
Four.
And there it is. He's got four, so that's tied for the league lead in home runs, but he's striking out a lot, and his batting average was 180. So, like he said at the interview, he said, "Look, you know, I'm feeling good. I'm not hitting the ball. I'm not making as much contact as I want, but I'm driving in the runs and I'm getting a few home runs. And I think that's what guys are looking for early on. And I think you can't ask for that much more. And if they get some hits, you know, a few more hits sprinkled in, I think the Tigers will be happy too, and they're winning."
I'll tell you the opposite of that. So yesterday I was at Chiba to see the Lions and Marines play, and Ernesto Mejia hit his first home run of the season, and afterwards the manager said, "Well, he's hitting for average." I was like, he's hitting .340, but...
Yeah, but that's not what we pay him for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're not paying him to be an on-base guy or a guy who produces runs that way.
Well, I remember earlier in that game he missed a pitch and popped it up and slammed his bat to the turf in such anger. And I thought, man, relax, you just missed it. You know, you'll be on the next one is what I'm thinking. And that's certainly not the way these guys think.
Asked him about that. See, he was looking for a fastball, and when he saw it, he couldn't lay off it. And actually, he said it was too high. It was a little too high for me.
Yeah.
I swung too hard and I couldn't stop my bat and I popped up, and he was frustrated, not I think that he missed it, but that he actually swung at it.
Right.
So so that's the thing. So the manager was complaining about the .240 hitter, and so probably Billion Punch in Koshien, they're probably complaining about the four home runs. Or not.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit more about the Tigers then. They're getting some really good early returns. I think the rotation, I think the first and foremost, besides the fact that Shun Takayama is on base every day, is that the rotation is doing better than I expected. I did, and one prime example is Yuta Iwasada. I mean, two starts, and he's been better than I think even he imagined he would be this season. He's only thrown 14 and two-thirds innings. He's got 24 strikeouts to lead the team, and that's including Messenger, who has pitched in three games, and Iwasada has only pitched in two games, and Atsushi Nomi has pitched in three games, and he has 22 strikeouts, so that's impressive stuff. Yeah, I think he struck out, I'm sure it was a career high the other day.
The 12 in Yokohama?
Yeah, I remember he tears up the Dragons, so unless he struck out 14 or something at Nagoya Dome sometime, I think that's probably a career high in that.
No, his career high in strikeouts was 6 before he struck out 12 BayStars. And I was at that game, but because he was Iwasada, I was not focusing on Iwasada. Sort of like until he made himself the story at the end of the game. You know, but you know, in retrospect, this guy's the story. And I didn't really pay enough attention to him during the game. You know, what's he throwing and how's he throwing, and also, of course, having no television from where I was sitting, I didn't have a TV in the Baystars, you know, Sky Lounge.
Right.
So, and here's the thing: I think he's pitched a lot of his career against the Dragons and the Baystars.
Right, and he tears up the Dragons for sure.
Well, his career high in strikeouts was against the Dragons, and it was in July. I'm going to say July 2012 or something, 2014 maybe. So, yeah, so him, and then of course the other thing which I would mention about Kanemoto, which Gomez did not, was that he's apparently open two things, I guess, strike me about him other than the what we've already mentioned. One, nobody appears to have a fixed spot on the team, I would say, except Toritani, and perhaps Fukudome.
Yeah.
And that he started the season with Shintaro Yokota.
Right.
Playing center field and batting second. And then all of a sudden, his batting average just nosedived like Yasuaki Yamasaki's so-called two-seam fastball.
So-called two-seamer, yep.
I asked him about that, too. That's another story for another day.
Okay.
Anyway, so it nosedived, and then Taiga Egoshi, whose name sounds familiar.
I think we brought him up on the show last week.
I think we did.
I think you did.
Okay. And so now he's playing center field and hitting home runs. So he's not really... And another thing, I guess, when it comes to his being open to new ideas is the whole idea that he has this image that basically everybody who's wearing a hunch in uniform has the ability to produce at a high level. And I'm not going to lock out anybody.
Yeah, he's giving people opportunities, or he's giving players some time on the field.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And if it's a case of, well, nobody would think of doing this, he's like going, yeah, well, who cares? And like, example... The best example is Kyuji Fujikawa.
Yeah.
You haven't started in 8 years. Yeah, so? Okay. Oh, wait, it does work.
Yeah, there's a lot of surprises here, and he is one of them. And he surprised me. I wasn't expecting much from him at all. I was thinking, okay, retread, and how are you going to use him out of the bullpen, and what are the situations and all this stuff? And then I heard... During camp, they talked about starting him, and then I think I wrote a blog post mentioning that he was going to be starting, and that he had started one time in preseason, and it wasn't great. It was just okay, but he hasn't pitched that much. I don't think he has more than 14 innings in two starts combined.
Well, the first one was 5 innings. I think it was 7 the second time.
Right. So he hasn't gone deep into games or anything, but his ERA is in the threes and in the low threes, and
he's kept him in the game twice.
Yeah, he won a game, so you can't ask for too much more than that. A guy you weren't really sure what his role was going to be when you acquired him. But the Tigers, look, they're tied for first in home runs in the Central League with 13. They're leading in runs. And remember that 2 years ago, they had this incredible run differential where they were like, you know, early on, they were about what they are now, about 20 runs on the positive side, on the plus side. And that's where they are now. And second in runs allowed, or their ERA is the lowest in the Central League. So, I mean, everything's going right.
Right. Well, they're, you know, being Hanshin and being where they play, if their pitching is good, they have to be the best in the league.
Have to be.
Well, they have to be. I mean, if the Hanshin Tigers' ERA is in the middle of the league, they're probably the worst pitchers in the league because Koshien keeps so many runs off the board. Now, having said that, I was just running league numbers and so on this morning or last night, and I noticed that the Tigers are probably the most unusually or abnormally productive team in the sense that given the number of hits and walks and doubles and triples and sacrifices and stolen bases and so on that they've accumulated as hitters, they scored a lot of runs.
Yeah, only DeNA has a lower team batting average.
Right.
So DeNA's at the bottom, you know, they're 5 games under 500 at the moment.
Well, obviously, batting average is about the worst indicator, but I mean, they're not really hitting for power and they're not really tearing up the league on base percentage, but they're scoring a lot of runs, which is just kind of weird. Now, I guess the best number if you look at the Tigers, what they haven't done is ground into double plays. They've done some good things, you know, hit power and drawn walks and not had double plays. And they've grounded into three double plays, which was, you know, they had two going into Saturday's games. And now they've got three, which is lower by about four than anybody else.
Yeah, Nippon Ham, I think, in the Nippon Ham and Rakuten in the Pacific League have six each.
Okay. So, you know, there are things they're doing, but I'm still going to say that the whole package is not – is they look better than they are right now offensively.
I'm there with you. Another thing, and like you talked about the pitching, in 14 games they have 11 quality starts. And that's big. That's huge. I mean, the Knicks, I have the Carp for 10. And I think Chunichi is actually getting a lot of quality starts, but we'll talk about that later.
Okay. So, what, like June?
Later in the show. But yeah. Oh. Egoshi hitting four home runs in as many games, that's a big surprise for them. I think the way Takayama is acting, and I sent you a note because I'm thinking, why is this? Who does this guy remind me of? And I asked you the question, who's another player who came out of college who, as a rookie, got a starting job and hit really well the first month?
Well, I mentioned,
mentioned a bunch of Giants players.
Unfortunately, and you see, I don't really remember months.
No, I know it's a difficult question.
I'm thinking of 80, you know, 90 years. I don't think of months. I wasn't here for anybody who was here before 1984. So
right, I tease. It's only a start, and who knows if he's going to hit like this for the rest of the season. So I don't want to assume. So I'm saying he's having a good start.
Yeah,
that's how I had to qualify. Oh, but
I was saying start as in start of this first season and not like as in the first season.
But yeah, if he hits like this for the entire season, yeah, he could be compared. But the guys you brought up, one of them is in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and the other ones won't be unless one of them turns out to be a great manager.
Right.
The other guy I was thinking of, well, the people I mentioned, I was thinking of Yoshinobu Takahashi because he had a pretty good year. Normally, if a batter has a decent year as a rookie, he's going to be rookie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
He came out of college. Now, Tomohiro Nioka is interesting because, of course, what I remember about him is him hitting a home run on opening day. Or I don't remember if it was opening day. It might have been the second game of the season. And Koji Uehara was pitching. So they were the top two draft picks. They weren't really draft picks. The Giants signed them outside the draft, but they still called them that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember him hitting the home run. He always hit a lot of home runs when Uehara pitched.
Yeah.
So I remember him. And then Nagashima, of course, was perhaps the most famous college player ever and the most famous player ever.
Shigeo, yeah.
Yep. And yeah. Rookie of the year, and I think batting champion is a rookie too. So,
yeah, it'll be fun to watch and see how Takayama finishes out this season and what he does. And then, of course, it's going to be, as Mauro said, fun to watch him the whole season and for the rest of his career. Because, you know, when Kanemoto said early on, and I tweeted it right when I saw that quote come on the internet, that he said, he's better than I expected.
Mm.
And we're seeing that. We're seeing that. And I think
I think you don't expect to see guys make the adjustments so quickly.
Mm.
You know, we're disappointed when they don't make them within a reasonable amount of time, but when they make them in the blink of an eye or more so, they appear to make them. You know, sometimes things just work out.
I gotcha.
You know, the guys are throwing the ball where you can hit them, and they haven't quite – you haven't had to make the adjustments yet.
Right.
You know, so we'll see with that.
Okay. And now I want to make a two-seam transition and talk about the success of a couple other teams, and they're in the other league. They're in the Pacific League. The first one is the Lotte Marines. They're getting production from every spot. And I saw a quote on I think it was the Japanese Yahoo, and it was a quote from Lotte skipper Tsutomu Ito, who was asked, what has been the key to their strong start this year? And he said, so many things are going right, I don't even know where to begin. And I think that's the perfect way to start out this segment of the show, because everything's going right. I mean, it couldn't be going better in any part of the team's structure or or their winning methods, or, you know, a lot of times you look at teams and I predicted they were going to be slow on the bases and all this stuff. And even Alfredo Despaña looks quick on the bases. I saw him go from first to third in a game early on where I'm like, how did he get over there? Mm-hmm. How did he get over there? So here's another thing. They have knocked this trio of opening day starters out of the games, and they went on to win the games. They knocked out Shohei Ohtani.
Mm-hmm.
Then they knocked out Chihiro Kaneko. Now, granted, he hasn't been
Ohtani.
He hasn't been the guy we.
Hey, Shohei Ohtani knocked himself out with about 5 fork balls, but that's another story.
Well, look, they had the bats in the hand, and he was
true enough. And then they couldn't do anything after that.
Well, they still won.
I would say more than that. I would say Hideaki Wakui has been good enough.
Well, let me finish the trio here.
Oh, so
I got Ohtani, and then Kaneko, and then Tadashi Setsu of the SoftBank Hawks. So the Oryx ace, the Hawks opening day starter. Now, granted, these guys could nobody could mistake these guys for Sawamura Award winners at the moment, but they were the opening day starters. So it's not like they're just taking advantage of so-called weak competition. They're socking it to some guys who have some experience.
Setsu, yes. Setsu,
because Setsu got sent to the minors the other day after another poor start.
Oh, good, because it's about time. He's about a month ahead of schedule this year.
Well, I don't know why they even started him on opening
day. I don't know.
I think it was just a peace offering or something. Maybe they had some kind of conflict in the offseason we don't know about. But anyway... Some kind of olive branch was offered, and he got the nod. But yeah,
they keep giving him open ending day starts, and sort of like, well, this is the year he can stick in the rotation. But he hasn't. Basically, he's gone back to the farm. I think he went back to the farm 2 years ago in June. I think last year it was May, and this year it's April. So yeah. Maybe next year he'll start the season on the farm. I don't know.
but the Marines, they're the team. Obviously, they're only 2 games over 500, and it's still a surprise because they have been winning so much and at such a high rate. And I think the most surprising thing for me is all the production. Like, they're leading the Pacific League with 10 home runs.
That's unusual because typically the Marines, because of their park, are fairly far down, and also because of their approach, which has been a more of a get-on-base approach.
Slap-and-run kind of a thing.
Right. And of course, Despaña hadn't hit home runs, but he'd been, you know, he had a really high average. So things had been working, and things had been working out well. They do have by far the most extra base hits in Japan.
Exactly. All the doubles, the triples. Kei Hosoya, who's a guy in his 11th year as a pro. Now, that's the kind of guy, I mean, you know, I would expect you to be all over this guy because he's been one of those fringy guys who... Mm. Who, you know, he's absolutely a surprise this year, and nobody could say, well, I saw that coming. We knew this was going to be the breakout year, because after 11 years, who knows? You're going to get this kind of thing.
I think I can't remember the season. It might have been 2007 or 2008. And before the season, I asked Bobby, who's going to be your, you know, who's the guy who can make a difference this year? And he said, I'm not going to tell you. You go look it up. It was Bobby being Bobby. And knowing that I like to look stuff up if you give me a clue. And he said, he's a catcher, but I want him to be an infielder. Okay, so I basically went through their minor league records. I looked for good hitters who had been catchers, who had a little catching on their resume, and Hosoya popped it up. And I said, it's Kei Hosoya. And he said, yeah, I think he's gonna make a big impact either at second or third. And, of course, that was 8 years ago.
Yeah, in 2008, he played in 20 games.
Yeah.
hit a .67.
Yeah, so he's one of these guys that is just like the timing was wrong. You know, his adjustments were not there when they needed him to make the adjustments. The other thing that happened with the Marines was second base became occupied by the front office when they brought in Tadahito Iguchi.
Mm-hmm.
And that pushed Shunichi Nemoto off the map, and it pushed Hosoya because Imai was playing third, and he wasn't going to take over Imai's job.
Mm-hmm.
So it pushed two guys into the shadows, and I think Nemoto did recover from that to some degree until Luis Cruz came back.
Right.
But Hosoya really never did. But so it's nice to see him get that second chance.
Yeah, I mean, before this year, he had seven doubles in his career. He's already got five.
Mm.
He had one triple in his career. He had three in consecutive games, so three triples in as many games. He's knocking the cover off the ball at 383.
Mm. Well, I think he's the biggest. Yeah, he's obviously the biggest change. And I think the other change for me. Of course, second base is good because they're getting production out of Shogo Nakamura.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing that struck me is the defense at catcher.
Yeah, yeah.
Nakamura is really, really good.
Yeah, he is. And remember when Ito took over, that was one of the issues. Who's going to be the catcher? And they could not find someone to stand out and separate himself, either with the bat or on the defensive side. And we kept talking about that. And even Tamura at the moment is only hitting .212, but it doesn't seem like it because he's on base so much. He's scoring runs. He's productive. It's just amazing.
Yeah, and his defense is remarkably good, I think. So he's going to give probably Ginjiro Sumitani a run for his money for Golden Glove this year.
Although Ginjiro is just, he's awesome.
He is awesome.
He is awesome.
I had a nice chat with him yesterday too, which was kind of interesting. But that's again another story.
So, even at the moment, I'm not going to reevaluate what I said about the Marines, but they are different from what I expected. Other than Okada, I still don't see any plus defenders. But now that you bring up Tamura, that's you might have a plus defender behind the plate. They still seem to me like they're going to be slow, and they haven't played defense. They haven't played great. They haven't played poorly. Mm. They haven't played great on the defensive side of the ball. But it's only cost them a couple games here and there.
I like Nakamura. I do like Kyoto. Okay.
Kyoto's okay,
but he's athletic. He's one of these athletic guys who sometimes you wonder if he's actually a ball player.
Yeah.
You know, he's got all the basic talents, but sometimes they don't come together in useful combinations. So he's an athletic guy, but as a right fielder, he's not good at tricky plays.
Yeah, I mean, they put him in right, they put him in left sometimes. He's okay.
Yeah, he's all right, but he's not a plus defender, as you say. Also, no. Yeah, I haven't seen much out of him yet. Daichi Suzuki's got no range and no arm, I should say, more than no range. And so, yeah, it's not going to be a big thing. The other thing is I like Tatsuyuichi this year.
Mm-hmm.
He's having one of his good spells so far.
Yeah, he's reliable. Their bullpen is really steady. And
well, he's reliable now, but he's
paid. Well, he's always injured, right? He's always injured at the beginning of seasons.
I don't know what, but he's patently, he'll have seasons where he's good and seasons where he's bad and spells where he's bad, where he's good and spells where he's just atrocious. So I don't know what the story is with them, but he looks good right now.
Well, I mean, what, 31 games? In 2009, he pitched in 31 games. That's his high for his career. So he's just injured.
Right.
When he's out there, he's pretty much usable.
And I don't know. 2010's my favorite Uchi is that he went through the whole season walking everybody he could. In fact, he was, he's in the bullpen. Let me in the game. I ought to walk some people. And then come September, he turned into Mariano Rivera. Like, what's going on with this guy? I mean, he threw a cutter that was like nobody's business, almost like they should have been doing drug testing.
Hashtag high heat.
And now he's found some sort of comfortable medium in there where he's not walking everybody he sees and he's getting outs. And he's developed another pitch, I believe. I wouldn't know too much from watching, two games. But
right.
But he looks like he's got a little more going for him than just the cutter and his spotty commands, so yeah. Spotty control.
And then another guy who's and I think 2 years ago when he had a really good spring, I said, look, he's going to be good, but he might be a guy in the middle of the lineup in a couple years, but he's not that right now. And that's Seiya Inoue. And he has been really good. He has been really good for them.
Yeah.
He's been very productive. He's good on balls that are near him. He's good at fielding them and making them in the outs, but he still doesn't have a lot of range. But
yeah.
He's not killing him. He's not killing him, and he's banging the ball. And the thing I've seen him make adjustments on is he used to just not be very disciplined at the plate. He used to swing at anything he thought he could hit. And now he's taking more pitches, and he's making pitchers come into the zone. and then he's punishing him. And that adjustment of not swinging at just about everything has helped him, because he makes good contact. He made good contact that spring that he had a good kind of breakout. I guess it was his rookie year, right?
Mm. Now, I get, and of course, the thing with the Marines is they got Jamaico Navarro waiting in the wings.
I think it is Jamaico. Yeah, is it Jamaico? I remember from Claudio being on.
Okay. And this guy looks good. I mean, when you say slugging first baseman, you know, you have this image.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of Tony Blanco or Mauro Gomez or Tyrone Woods or, you know, you name it. But this guy is more – he's not in that build.
Uh-huh.
He's more of an Alex – well, a young Alex Ramirez player. I guess Yoshio Itoi is probably a closer body type to Navarro. He's not thin. And, you know, not wiry like those guys, like maybe Inaba, Matsunori Inaba.
Oh, okay.
So he's, and I exaggerate a little bit because he's not that thin, but he's a slim guy. And one of the Marines guys, one of the batting practice pitchers who I talked to on occasion said, and he pitches to Kyoto and Navarro and Despina, and he says, this guy, Navarro, it's like he won't swing at a ball.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, when he gets on, I mean, he's got another couple weeks, I imagine, or another.
Yeah, yeah. I think he's gonna be out until the end of April.
Yeah, so he's coming, so they're gonna get better. And yeah, you know,
this is a guy who's got a quick. Well, I should say he's got a fast bat.
Uh huh.
As opposed to quick, and he's selective. So he's gonna put some balls over the fence. He's gonna hit some balls hard.
It's going to change their lineup too, so we'll see how he impacts if he adds, or if he, you know, if they're taking somebody who's hot out to put him in. We'll see how it goes, but yeah, it's going to be different. And they're two games over 500 at the moment here on Sunday morning. So, you know, by the time he gets in the lineup and starts producing, you know, they could be really good. They could be really good.
Mm.
All right, let's make a seamless transition and talk about some teams that are not having the results they expected at the beginning of the season. That's at the top of that list is the DeNA Bay Stars. And they were a struggling team. They had dropped five straight. I went out to the park yesterday, talked to some people. Jose Lopez was not hitting well.
Well, he fixed that.
He fixed that yesterday, but they were not. They were getting good pitching. They had been getting decent pitching, and that series last week in Nagoya was a prime example where they couldn't score, but they didn't get blown out of games. They were in every game and had a chance to win right down to the last swing.
Mm-hmm.
They got shut out by Shunta Wakamatsu. Didn't have his best day, but he pitched well. And then they got shut out by a kid, but the guy's a 8-year pro, Yosuke Oguma, and
mm-hmm.
he's not somebody who's on the radar at all. He couldn't make the rotation out of camp. He had never pitched more than, I think it was 7 1/3 innings in his career, and that was, I think he pitched last year, he pitched 7 innings, and before that, oh, it was August of last year, 7 1/3 innings against Yokohama, and just a guy. You know, I had seen him throw before that he had decent stuff. And even on this night, he wasn't throwing hard and he wasn't overpowering anybody. He just messed up everybody's timing. And here he is coming out in the ninth inning and finishing off his first career complete game and made it a shutout. And I just think that a lot of the guys on the Bay Star side just had to be trying to pull their hair out with that whole series.
Mm. Well, with Oguma is interesting, but I think... You know, not being able to see a guy a lot, it could be, well, he showed them enough that they thought, you know, we could use this guy. We have a hole in our route, you know, a day.
A hole.
We've got a day open where we don't have anybody, you know, we kind of want to start, and we're playing DeNA.
There you go.
At home. So this guy might be able to do it. And he did. And we don't know the story, but that sounds like what the story might be. You know, it's like the story about how Daisuke Yamai got his break.
Uh-huh.
They had last game of the season, and the Dragons were out of the pennant race. And this is 2003. And, you know, the Tigers blew away the Central League that year. And Ochiai said, to the pitching coach.
Ochiai, the then manager.
Hiromitsu Ochiai said, pick a starter for tomorrow. And he had two corporate league guys who were sort of struggling and not really doing anything play John Ken for it.
And rock, Dice paper, gave, scissors, baby.
That's right. Dice gave
solves all the problems.
That's right. Indeed it does. And Dice KMI won the John Ken and then did a really good job in that game. And, he got the extra look he needed that sort of kept him on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
So that could have been what happened to Ogama. He won, he was good at John Ken.
Right. So whatever, he got his break. He got that start and he did well in it. And he certainly earned another one. Now,
yeah.
The thing about the Bay Stars, though, is that I could see already that Alex Ramirez, I'm calling him Namikon, he is definitely a player's manager because he kept putting James Romack out there. And this guy wasn't getting good swings. He's not making good contact. It looked like he had no chance for good results.
Mm-hmm.
And he kept putting him out there and putting him out there. And finally, I think in the last game of that series and then in the series that they're playing currently against the Swallows, he took him out of the lineup. But Romack's a guy who had, I believe he's got a bunch of home runs in the minors, and it mm-hmm. just hasn't worked out early. But I think he's going to stick with him, and he's going to give him a chance. And the same with Jose Lopez, with J-Lo. He was talking to him a lot yesterday. I saw them talking before batting practice. I saw them talking after batting practice. Everyone ran over to get some comments from Alex and ask him what was going on about the conversations that the two were having.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're all expecting, because they can, those two in particular, but Moscoso as well, they all speak the same language, literally.
Venezuelan.
And so because they can do that, and Alex is the manager, that the communication, we're expecting that to be much better. And we know that Alex is just chock full of incredible information about hitting, especially in Japan, and working catchers and working counts and working situations. And you got to believe that he can convey all that stuff to Jose Lopez. So I didn't understand why he was having such a bad start and to the season. And even though he was hitting some singles here and there, he's just not producing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we saw a breakout game yesterday. I hope it gets him going. I'm not expecting one game to get a guy turn his season around or turn things around early. But hopefully for him, it does.
Well, I think three home runs and three at bats will kind of give you a little confidence boost. But it's hard to say. I have to remember, I think with Alex Ramirez, the word that comes to mind mostly is situational hitting.
Exactly.
Because he basically predicated so much on, in this situation, what kind of pitches am I going to see? What do I, A, what am I going to see? And B, what do I need to do? And what can I do? Those three things, mm-hmm. A, B, and C. And, one would expect, the Bay Stars might do better at this because he's going to impart some information and, it's sort of clear up some of the stuff there. But on the other hand, I remember Marty Brown had a similar approach, which is that we can do a lot better if we're better at situational hitting, which is, yes, you can do better. But if you don't have frequent run scoring opportunities, it doesn't really matter how efficient you are,
right?
Because you're not going to score enough runs.
Right.
Okay. And that's actually.
You're not going to hit 1,000 in those situations. You're not going to bat 1,000.
Right. Right. So essentially, yes, that's where we are with the Bay Stars. They need to get to the situation where nobody's out, nobody's on base. That's the situation they need to deal with more.
Well,
getting the leadoff guy on, hitting with the runner on first, as opposed to, winning the lottery by hitting 1,000 when runners are in scoring position.
Right, right. And I thought, the Romack situation, it reminded me of Brandon Laird last year, because he struggled. And although Brandon seemed to hit more home runs and hit with power, and James is not hitting at all,
mm-hmm.
He didn't catch a couple balls here and there. And I think it's hard when you're not winning and the team isn't scoring. It's really difficult for managers to be patient with you in those situations. And I think that's why Ramirez had to finally take him out of the lineup, but mm-hmm. I expect to see him back, and I don't know, maybe he can be one of those guys who goes to the minors or to the farm, gets a lot of swings, and then comes back, and he's locked in, maybe.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are you know, I don't know what adjustments he needs to make. I know that worked for Niger Tony Plush Morgan. You know, he went down to the farm team, he found his timing, he came back, and he was on base like at a 380 clip the rest of the year.
Right, right. But they in the Pacific League, the Buffaloes are really struggling. And the Buffaloes, as of Sunday morning here, no home runs, fewest runs scored, worst team ERA, and Yoshio Itoi had hit in every game to open the season, and yet he's not doing the little things. He's not, you know, we talked about the extreme shifts the other day, and I said there are no total pull hitters, and that's what he's turned into. He has turned into a guy who's trying to pull everything.
Mm.
And so he's hitting, you know, they are shifting a little bit on him, and he's hitting the ball into these shifts and making outs. And I mean, no situational hitting. They had hit into a team high 10 double plays. That was a team high when I looked it up. Save was since passed them, but still
a league high.
A league high. I'm sorry. Yeah, league high.
Yeah, Cebu hit into three in the first three innings yesterday.
Yeah. So the rotation is not living up to the minimal expectations that we had. The hitters are not coming through, and the defense is not sharp, and you just can't win games like that. And I talked about the fact that they weren't making little plays, and they weren't making simple plays, and they were in games, but they were losing. And I think that's the same situation that the Hawks had been in when they lost four in a row?
Mm.
The Hawks, it looks like they're just doing just enough to win the game or just enough to get the lead in these games. And then their pitching, you know, it wasn't the same as last year. Barrios, who had this amazing run last year where he didn't give up any runs, seems like he can't get out there and not give up any runs this year. And they actually had to send him down to the farm along with Setsu. And I read somewhere that it was the first time since 1993 that the starting and opening day, and this was the fourth series that they had gone through, and they still hadn't won a series. And they have a chance to right that ship, I guess, today. And then when they didn't win a series right out of the gate in 1993, they finished last, so that's not good.
No, it's not good. And I was looking, you know, I guess one of the things, you know, it's early in the season. And it hadn't occurred to me, but anyway, one of the reasons, you know, it's early in the season, because if I tell you this is a team batting average, a slugging percentage, or on base percentage, if I said 283,
I wouldn't guess on base percentage. I don't know what I guess.
That was the BayStars slugging average going into Saturday's games. You know, I was about to say that Oryx was worse. Oryx is bad, actually, and SoftBank's terrible. You know, SoftBank's got, you know, there's about – and then I was thinking, oh, Oryx is bad, DeNA's bad. But really about half the teams in NPB have slugging and on-base percentages that if you put them together, you wouldn't be able to tell which is which. And normally there's about 100 points gap.
Different. Yeah.
So the power is really weird. And this has been a weird season. And one of the reasons it's been weird, I think, is because it's been so cold. I think the first 10 days were unusually cold.
Mm.
So we're just kind of getting out of that now, and I think that'll have some impact.
Okay, we can blame it on the cold, but yeah, these guys are – I mean, you can say that, but then the Hawks and the Buffaloes don't seem to be pitching well, and that
– I agree. Well, I'll tell you the thing about the Hawks the Hawks, they're going to get it done.
Because I believe in them.
Yeah. Well, I believe in them too. And the reason I believe in them is because defensively they're getting it done overall.
Overall, yes.
But the Buffaloes have allowed 6.8 through Friday's game, 6.8 walks or hit batsmen per 9 innings.
Yeah.
Yuck is right.
Can't pitch around it.
Well, they're pitching around guys that they intended to challenge. Yeah. So there's just no light at the end of the tunnel there, you know. And you can say, oh, the SoftBank ain't pitching, but they're allowed, you know, they're not walking guys. They're walking less than 3 guys a game.
Yeah, they're just giving up runs on a lot of home runs, actually.
Yeah. Okay. Now here's the thing. And again, going back to things that are working, let's talk about DeNA. And this is a guy I love, as you know, is the rookie catcher Itobashira.
Mm-hmm.
Tobasher, excuse me. And I love what he's doing behind the plate, other than sort of catching foul pops, which he's apparently not very good at.
Someone said he needs to get his eyes checked.
Man, or something. Or have him stop the wind. I think the wind has bothered him a couple of those, and he hasn't caught them. But he's, so far he's dropped a couple that I've seen. Anyway, the Bay Stars have the fewest walks or hit batsmen in NPB per nine innings. So to me, you know, I look at that and I look at, you know, who else is close is SoftBank. So I think, you know, Alex has spent a lot of time working on those, on the pitchers and catchers and the battery. And that's something. That's a really good thing to build on. So I see some light at the end of the tunnel. When I see 6.8 walks and hit batsmen per nine innings, I think these guys need a lot of work.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, it is not working.
Okay. All right, and then one quick two-seam transition. I want to talk about the Lions, Tomoyamori.
Yeah.
I thought it was weird the other day. I think it was Saturday's game that I saw him batting in the two-hole, and I thought, So you did the same thing. You said,
Yeah, well, what it made me think of was Kazunori Yamamoto, who was in the 1994 Daiei Hawks, the manager, Riko Yamamoto, who's sort of a favorite of mine. He had, you know, Yamamoto was player of the month, and people were complaining about it.
Mm-hmm.
Kazunori Yamamoto was a slugger. He was a guy who drew a lot of walks, hit for a decent average, hit for power, but they batted him second. And all season long, the manager, Riko Yamamoto, said, I didn't really have anybody else. You know, that's nonsense. He put a good hitter in the number two hole, and in Japan, you have to apologize for that.
Sorry, I'm not going to make this guy who's a good hitter bunt every time, so sit back and watch.
He bunted one time that year, and actually I was at the game yesterday and when that happened, and somebody said, wow, they've got a guy who doesn't bunt, and Mori has never bunted. He has no sacrifice bunts in his career. So anyway, I was looking at, you know, what's the norm. I mean, generally in OPS in NPB, the worst spot is eighth. You know, you can't compare nine because you got pitchers, but all of NPB, you know, 599 OPS, that's the standard for the eight hitters. Mm-hmm. But next worst is 653 by the number two hitters.
Wow.
Okay. And since 2011, pretty much all the teams, you know, how many sacrifices, 2011, 12, 13, 14, 15, 5 year span. The starting number two hitters averaged 246 sacrifice bunts over that period, over that 5 year period. So about 50 bunts a year per team. Okay. And the Pacific League, it's a little lower. But you know, here you've got a guy like Mori who has zero career sacrifice bunts and has a career OPS of 842, which is better than the OPS, which is exactly the same as the OPS of Pacific League, NPB cleanup hitters over the last 5 years. So to me, I love it.
Yeah, I remember talking to Matt Franco of the Marines when he played under Bobby Valentine, and you remember Bobby used to change or have these lineups where he'd mix and match, and people would be batting in different slots in the lineup every day. And it was crazy. And Matt said, hey, look, it's an excuse if you say I can't hit because I'm batting in the two hole today, or I can't hit because I'm batting seventh today. It doesn't make sense. He said that's silly.
Yeah.
So, and I hear all this debate in the States, you know, and these experts say one day they say, well, it doesn't, you know, lineups don't matter. You just need to get your better hitters at the top of the order and blah, blah, blah. And then you hear him the next day saying, well, you know, why are they batting this guy second and why are they batting this guy third? And I'm like, well, you just said it doesn't matter. So what are you talking about?
It doesn't matter much. I'll have to say it doesn't matter much.
You know, I just want to get on my guys with the higher on base percentage all together. And then after that, it doesn't really matter. They're going to make the same outs. And another thing I'd like to do is say, okay, well, who's pitching today? We have a guy who throws really hard. Who are my guys who don't handle really good fastballs, and who are the guys who don't hit sliders? Let's move them to get fewer at bats. But you know, who's to say that that guy's going to have a good slider that day? So I'm with Matt, you know, just get out there and play.
And hit
for the situation, and you don't have to worry about what slot you're in. So I like the move too.
You know, I think that's absolutely right. I think it's a matter of it's a mental thing. It's like, oh, I should be this kind of hitter today. Well, you can't be this kind of hitter today. You are what you are. And, you know, just go out and hit.
All right. So what I'm looking forward to seeing is Morty trying to get a bunt down a couple times and failing and then blasting a home run with Shogo Akiyama on first base. I'm looking for that to happen. Let's make a four-seam transition.
Thank you.
Talk about Kenta Maeda, his debut. It was really fun to watch the game on Thursday morning, Japan time. He goes six innings, doesn't allow a run on five hits with no walks, four strikeouts, and he hits this home run. And it was just, I put on in the headline I wrote, it was a dream debut. I think the dream probably for him would have been to pitch a shutout to go the whole way, because he only threw 84 pitches. And I hearken back, I said, why are they taking him out? I know the Padres seem to be catching up with a little bit more of his pitches, but it's just because he's getting them up and he's not locating, and he can make the adjustment. And it's only 84 pitches, but then I thought, okay, in that introductory press conference, they talked about the quote-unquote irregularities in his pitching arm, particularly the elbow. Although I don't think they said it was the elbow, they just said irregularities. So, but we know that he had elbow trouble here in Japan, and he never actually got anything worked on surgically. So whatever the irregularities are, I think they were concerned about that. They might have had him on a pitch count, and they said, hey, you know, he's done great, and the Padres are catching up, so let's take him out. So they took him out. I was kind of disappointed at that, but great start for him. And the Dodgers didn't, you know, they hadn't allowed a run, and I just thought for sure he was going to be the first pitcher to allow a run, so I'm glad he didn't do that.
After the first two games, they shut him out. The chances that he's going to be the first pitcher to allow a run are pretty good.
It was pretty high, and actually he did.
He ain't going to be the second.
He actually did allow a run. I think I can't remember what the situation was, but there was a play where they threw home at home plate, and I think the runner was Corey Spangenberg, and he looked safe. And as I watched the replays on TV at the office, I told the guy I was working with that day, I said, you know, I think he's safe, but the umpire ruled him out, and I don't think they can overturn this with the video evidence.
It was reviewed.
Yeah, it was. I said that they couldn't overturn it.
Right.
Based on the video evidence that they had, I didn't think that they would overturn it, and they didn't.
They were allowed to. They didn't used to be, but now they're allowed to, and they refused to.
Well, I mean, based on that evidence, I don't think they could overturn it.
Yeah, well, generally the principle is the umpire on the field is right unless we can prove otherwise. So it was sort of one of those. It was kind of an O.J. Simpson verdict.
Hashtag
Ouch! I don't think we're gonna go down that road. I'm staying away from that. But
fair enough.
I just didn't think that based on that evidence. I think he got his foot in on the plate and it was down. But I don't think that there was conclusive video evidence that he was safe. So I actually think Mike King gave up the first run, but officially he didn't. So
He didn't. No, he didn't give it up. Although it looked like he should have.
And then I saw somebody out on Twitter, and thank goodness I follow these Japanese sites. Somebody on Twitter sent out a whole list of guys, because the home run was the coolest part, I think, of the game. And the Dodgers giving him the silent treatment, you know, once he came back to the bench, and then Kenta's sticking his hands up in the air saying, what's up with this? And then everybody coming over and
he was expecting the party in front of the dugout.
Yeah, and it wasn't there. I thought that was a cool moment. But guys who hit, you know, how many runs or how many at-bats or plate appearances it took guys before they hit their first home run, and these are Japanese players. So the guy who hit a home run in his first at-bat, or the Japanese player who hit a home run in his first at-bat in the major leagues, was Kazuo Matsui.
Right.
And then in his second at-bat, Kenji Jojima hit one out.
Wow.
And so Kenta Maeda joins him as the second fastest. And then Kosuke Fukudome took four plate appearances, and he got his first home run. Akinori Iwamura, 11 plate appearances. Mm-hmm. Norichika Aoki, 15.
Wow.
Oh, Tsuyoshi. Yeah, Tsuyoshi Shinjo, 19 plate appearances. Ichiro Suzuki, 20.
Mm.
Hideki Matsui, 34.
34, and it was a grand slam at Yankee Stadium.
Aha, see, you come in with the extra information. Sol Taguchi, 62 plate appearances, and then Tadahito Iguchi had took 93. He's the longest. And then in terms of pitchers who have hit home runs, Japanese pitchers who have hit home runs in the major leagues, Kenta Maeda joined Hideo Nomo, who has 4 home runs. Wow, I didn't know he had 4.
And who was the first Japanese player to hit a home run in the major leagues.
Wow. And then Masato Yoshii, and Kazuhisa Ishii. So he's the 4th Japanese pitcher to hit a home run in a big league ball game. So that was cool. It was a really cool experience for him and for the Dodgers, and they got out of there with 3 wins. So it was a good opening start for him, and I hope he gets to pitch deeper in the games. I hope he does pitch deeper in the games, and I hope that elbow holds up.
Or his irregularities don't surface, or
I'm assuming it's still the elbow, but whatever the irregularities are that they're not expounding on here.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so some notes. Kyle Davies, and I wanted to mention this last year, but we didn't get a chance. He became the first pitcher in NPB history to allow a home run on his debut pitch.
And wow.
That came to Shun Takayama.
Wow.
And then he was deactivated last week with back pain.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Davies didn't actually lose the game. They went into extra innings.
On March 31st?
And finished with a 6-6 tie on March 31st. So that was interesting. I wanted to bring that up. And then Takahiro Norimoto, the guy I call Nori Nori, because Nori Nori means to be all in or to really be enthusiastic. Friday, he won his 3rd game from opening day, his 3rd start, and he fanned 10-plus in the process and became the first pitcher in NPB history to do that, and while winning those first 3 starts. A lot of the other guys, like Darvish, had fanned 10-plus to start out a season, and some other guys had done it, but they didn't win the games. So he's the first one to win the games and strike out more than 10 guys or 10 or more guys in the process. So that was pretty cool. So good.
Yep.
Good stuff is going on with the Eagles, and I like what they're doing, and I like what Nori Nori is doing, and hopefully they'll be able to keep it up. Their starting pitching has been really good.
They were getting some abuse for some of the people in their rotation, but so far they've been pretty good.
All right. No questions this week, but if you have any, send them to yakyujohn@gmail.com or send us a high heat message at JBW Podcast on Twitter, or you can go to the Facebook page and leave us a message or a comment there. Thanks a lot, and taping here before the last game of the weekend, so if anything incredible happens, we'll get it on next week's show. Thanks a lot for listening, and enjoy your baseball.
Thanks for hanging with us.